in the sixth edition basic text. And we are going to have Archer K from Hilo, Hawaii, read the story.
Aloha, Archer, addict. Among the challenges this addict has faced in his 30 years clean are cancer and open heart surgery. From it all, he has learned about surrender and love. God walked in. When I first came to Narcotics Anonymous, I didn't think I could go without drugs for 30 hours, let alone 30 years. I was terrified NA wasn't going to work for me. I tried religion and psychiatry and the military. Being a veteran, I thought that the government would and could save me, but they couldn't. I walked into my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous alone. Behind me was jail, hospitals, violence, foster homes, a sick mother dependent on food stamps and government welfare, and a dad who abandoned us. A couple of members took me to a house where there were other addicts living clean. I didn't eat or sleep for days, but I found the message of recovery. One of the gifts I received in NA has been falling in love and getting married to my wife. We have been together now for 26 years, and we have been faithful to each other all these years. Before I met my wife, I was a pretty rough and reckless guy. There's no question that working the steps has helped me have a relationship with her. After we had been together for 5 years, my wife told me that she needed intimacy. I wish she had asked for $1 million. Giving her that would have been easier for me. And at first I thought she meant sex, but it wasn't about sex. It was about sharing who I am with her. The steps have given me the courage to be honest and intimate with another human being. Narcotics Anonymous has also given me the ability not only to hold a job, but to work my way up from the bottom of a company to the position of vice president. I never got out of ninth grade, so to be vice president of an industry leader was an accomplishment. I showed up to work every day. I was disciplined and I was trustworthy. When I went to work, it didn't matter if I was going to be accepted or promoted or hired or fired. What mattered was staying clean and trying to go with the truth I found in the steps. When I was 2 years into my job, the company hired a clinical psychologist to pick everyone's brain. I told my wife that they were going to find out who I was and fire me. When I went to meet this man, I had told myself I was going to lie, but then he started to ask me all these questions and I ended up sharing the equivalent of my inventory with him. After it was over, I knew he was going to have to give me up, but he said that although the company executives did need to hear about what I had told him, they also needed to hear what he was going to tell them. That he had never felt the same kind of honesty and integrity that I had shared with him from anyone in his whole career. He wanted to thank me and said he would hire me in a heartbeat. I have also been blessed with opportunities to serve and give back to the fellowship. One of the most profound things that happened for me was that I had procrastinated and had no speaker for an H&I commitment, forcing me to do the panel at a hospital detox unit by myself. Even though I had time clean, I was still intimidated to go there by myself. It was a co-ed panel with duly diagnosed addicts, most of them with physical challenges and many who were wartime vets. I was setting up the literature and taking everyone's inventory because I was afraid and it made me feel better. A guy would walk in and I would say to myself, I've done more than him. A woman would walk in and I would say, she's going to think I'm weak. Finally, God walked in. And God walked in the form of a person who looked like he came from the same clan I came from. He had similar tattoos. He combed his hair in the same way. And the only difference between him and me was that he was escorted by two orderlies. He was what they call a frozen addict. He had put a needle in his arm with synthetic heroin, and it had frozen him for his entire life. Inside this man, his mind was going a mile a minute. But on the outside, he was drooling all over himself. He would never be able to speak to another person, let alone pick up the phone or write a step. How could I take this man's inventory? At that moment, I knew, in a way I hadn't before, that we are all in this together, and there but for the grace of God go I. I knew that if I could do anything for that man, it would be to think of him when I feel like complaining about not wanting to do an inventory or pick up the phone. When I spoke at a detox that night, the tears were coming out of his eyes. This man changed my life. When I celebrated 22 years clean, I hit a series of difficult situations. First, after being with my employer for 20 years, I was terminated in the corporate downsizing. I was given a few hours notice and I was gone. I felt abandoned, embarrassed, and ashamed. A week went by and my mother-in-law, whom I loved deeply, died. My wife was then physically attacked by a family member, and it took all my strength not to attack back. I struggled to find a permanent career for about a year and a half, and my finances were seriously affected. And just when I was meeting with some executives for a big job, my eyes went cross and I couldn't see straight. I had a stroke. In the hospital, I was told I had three strokes due to a heart defect. I had a hole in my heart and would have to have open heart surgery so they could close the hole and save my life. I got real angry at God and I felt like I didn't get clean to experience this misery. One more time, my sponsor reminded me that we must handle life on life's terms and that we are blessed to have the support of a loving God and a program of recovery. After I had my open heart surgery, I was in intensive care and there were all these tubes coming out of me. I was coming off anesthesia and the pain was insane. I couldn't speak and I was so thirsty. I had my family and loved ones around. But there was this one person in particular, I knew it was a male figure who seemed like he could read my mind. If I was thirsty, he would swab my mouth. And when I was in pain, he rubbed my feet. Eventually, I found out that this man was an addict whom I hadn't seen in many years. He had heard that I was in intensive care and worked his way through the hospital and got in with my family and just kind of took over. My family was watching this man be so loving to me. I still get emotional about it. To me, that sums up this program. I wish I could say it all got better after that. It did in a deep, spiritual way, but I continued to have physical challenges. 2 years after my open heart surgery, I was diagnosed with cancer. I was still not working steadily and found out I had an aggressive cancer. I prayed and cried and talked, and then one more time I surrendered to a loving higher power. It was so humbling and freeing at the same time. I had radical surgery and was informed that all the cancer was gone. With all my physical challenges, one of my biggest fears was getting hooked on prescribed medication. I read In Times of Illness and had my medication monitored by my sponsor and sponsees. The miracle is that I did not get an obsession to use. Recently, I found out that the cancer has come back and that the last three readings had been higher and higher. The last time I saw the oncologist, I was told that they want me to go through 8 weeks of daily radiation. They tell me that the chances are very good that I'll be cured from this cancer. I'm still surrendering. All of this has changed me profoundly, and yet the truth is that the fear and anxiety that go along with being diagnosed with cancer and having open heart surgery pale in comparison to how I felt when I walked through the doors of NA. The fear, loneliness, and isolation that I had back then were way worse than what I'm going through now. I've been very well supported by my friends in NA, particularly the old timers. I did have some sponsees pull away, one who, when I told him about the cancer, jumped up and said, "How can you do this? My father did the same thing." I knew where he was coming from. He started crying and tried to leave, and I said, "This is not about you. You know that." There have definitely been challenges in dealing with all the illness. When they start taking out your prostate and your lymph nodes and other parts, having sex is an issue. What bothered me, even though my wife and I don't have children, was that I could never father children. It just blew me away. All these things were hitting me at once. I had to work on surrendering to the reality that I'm not going to have any children and that my name is not going to carry on. What I've received from this process is a deep feeling of wanting to be of service, not only to the Fellowship of NA, which I love so much, but to humankind. As a result of being clean all these years, I've had the opportunity to grow older, physically and experience what all human beings have to face: health issues, financial ups and downs, family and friends going through life's challenges and changes, and ultimately facing our physical mortality. I have been blessed to move through all of life's colors over the years, but without the steps my NA family and the principles that I've learned, these life changes would have been much more difficult to cope with and also to celebrate. I believe that the longer I'm on this planet, the more wisdom I develop, but I also believe that the wisdom deepens and I end up going full circle to a profound state of innocence. And what a freedom that innocence brings. I've been through a lot and I want to get mad at God. But I know all of this is not about God or being mad at God. These challenges have taught me about love. The love has been the hardest thing for me to accept in my recovery. And what's even harder is accepting and giving myself that love. What a profound gift to love and be loved. I thank NA, my sponsor, and especially the 12 steps for continuing to teach me.
And now Bill R., the author from Arizona, will share.
My name is Billy. I'm an addict. Okay. Wow. I've done this before. Last year I was privileged to share, have my story read at the Paradise Strong meeting. And it's always, you know, it was very emotional because I hadn't, as the rest of the speakers had shared, I didn't really read my story very often, and to hear somebody else read it is a surreal experience. I first want to thank, you know, the Paradise Strong Fellowship and Francis for having me do this, and for having the rest of these speakers share. You know, I want to thank you all. And Laura, I get it about the tears, boy. I tell you, and the longer I stay clean, the more real it gets, you know. And Archer, boy, I got to tell you, I got to do this quick. I love you a lot. And thank you for reading the story. There's really, you know, what can I say? You just read it, right? In listening to it, I say to myself, you know, you have to kind of pinch yourself and say, wow, you know, that was 15 years ago. And what's happened since then? And I think it's appropriate, you know, what this meeting is then and now, because that's all we have, right, is the now. Before I share a little bit, I do want to reach out to all of you here, particularly to those who have time or don't, are newcomers or whatever, and you're stuck between that rock and a hard place, to where you're jammed up and you want to use, and you know you can't, or you don't want to be here anymore on this planet, you know you're in so much pain, I'm here to say welcome home. I'm here to say that you're not unique. I know that when somebody told me that when I was in pain, I said, who are you telling me I'm not unique? You don't know me. Of course I'm unique, you know, because we're driven, and this disease feeds on ego, and it feeds on us being separate and apart from each other and from, you know, the human race. And, you know, when drugs stopped working for me, as I'm sure with you, I didn't know what to do, you know, and how to react, you know, and I'm, when I got clean, let's go back a little bit. I want to share a little bit before we had the basic text. I got clean in the summer of 77. So, and I know there's folks on this meeting that have been here as long as that, and we're here before we had a basic text, and we only had a few IPs. And I remember that I think that the fellowship reached out to the meetings asking for stories in around 1978, 79, I think. And, you know, we had the other fellowship's book, which, you know, was, you know, I read it only because it's all we had. And And so fast forward, you know, then, you know, see, I have a disease where, you know, part of my addiction today, then and now, has been that, you know, I still go to judgment sometimes, you know, and back then I judged those people's stories that were in the book because I couldn't relate to them or they weren't exactly how I came from, you know. And so when you put a face to the story, it's really interesting. So hopefully, you know, you don't get disappointed because we build up, you know, who these people are when we read their story. But the bottom line is that it's not about this earth suit, as our friend Pepe used to share about. It's not how we comb our hair, what we eat, what color skin we are. And it's been said by the other speakers, and you all know. It's about being connected because we suffer from the same disease. We're human beings, obviously, but we're also addicts, you know. And that's the common bond that binds us. And so when I can, you know, put blinders on or close my eyes and just listen, I can get a lot more of the message, you know, and I used to do that at meetings, you know, I used to like to do that at meetings, but I was afraid to close my eyes. You know why? You know, because I figured, you know, people were going to think I was nodding out, you know, or that I was using, you know, why is he not get his eyes open? What's interesting for me is that, you know, not interesting is like I said, there's a lot's happened since I wrote that, since that was written. When they came in and they asked us to submit our story, of course, my ego said was, well, yeah, man, I want to do that. You know, I'd love to have my story in the basic text, you know. But then I also had that feeling of shame and non-worthiness and self-esteem and all that. And I said, well, what happens if I submit it and they don't choose it? You know, then I'm going to have to live with that. How many times have we done that, right? We haven't taken a chance or whatever, or just did something without a return, without expecting something in return. And so I went ahead and didn't do it. But there was a few other people, my homies, you know, guys that I got clean with and women, but a couple guys in particular whose stories got chosen. And when I found out, when I heard back like in 1980 is when I think the book was written, or 81, and I said, wow, those guys' stories were chosen. Wow, you know, it what I did was not that I was envious of them, probably somewhat, but it was that I thought that the message had to come from God, whereas that's exactly where it came from. I kind of boycotted the basic text for a few years, didn't read it, you know, when I finally read it and then started reading the stories, I said, wow, I can't even believe that this was inspired. God worked through, love worked through these people, you know, and us. And that's what we do, right? You know, because to me, you know, the title of my story is God Walked In. And I had a little bit of an issue with that. You know, I don't know about the rest of the authors, but, you know, when the process for me went down is I submitted my story. And of course, it was all what I thought all the, you know, what was going to be wanted was all the war stories, right? And it wasn't about the war stories. What they wanted is they wanted the love stories. And I share that for those of you who have heard me share before, those have been, the love stories have been the most difficult for me to experience clean. The most beautiful things in life. And I share about making amends to my brother, something as beautiful as that I almost used over. Can you believe that? Why? You know, when it's shared about the intimate story with my wife, when she said, you know, all those years ago, Billy, you know, I need something from you. I didn't like it. I knew I wasn't going to like what came out of her mouth. I didn't know what it was. I thought she wanted more money or she wanted me to do more work around the house or whatever. And when she said intimacy, it rocked my world, right? You know. And I had that temper tantrum because that's what we do, or that's what I do. When you confront me with reality, I'll throw up all that chafe. I'll throw off all that distraction. And it comes in the form of, first, anger, depending on who I'm talking to. So if anger doesn't work, I'll get humorous. I'll try to joke about it and get rid of it, right? I'll just, you know, exit the situation. I'll get away from it. And that's just what I did. I got up and I ran into the bedroom like a five-year-old kid. You know, I mean, I had 7 years clean. Yeah. And I asked my higher power, I said, you know, if you're really here, man, you need to help me with this one. And I didn't realize that, you know, what that was going to be and how beautiful that journey has been. I've been on that journey with my wife now for 40 years. We've been married. And I'll tell you, the intimacy, I thought we went intimate before COVID. Oh, forget about it. This COVID thing, I've been locked down in a big way, you know, and I know a lot of you have, but we've been locked down even more because my wife, unfortunately, was diagnosed with lung cancer 5 years ago. And this January, just before COVID hit, it had come back. With a vengeance, you know, and so there's nothing they can do. And they gave us, some time, prognosis. And so, they say, I don't mean to bring everybody down, but it's just, then and now, I've had many, many years with her, and the level of intimacy I thought I had before this cancer came back and we've been locked down. It goes beyond words, and I'm so grateful so much for my program and what I've learned, what I put in the bank, but really what I continue to do. I need you all more now than ever. No matter what, we don't use, right? And that was the story I got when I got clean. Cause I said, when I was kicking this last habit, man, back in 77, I said, to these guys, at this kick pad down in Hermosa Beach, there were 11 guys there kicking habits, man, and I knew someone was using, I knew someone was using. And I said, so what is this all about, man? What do you need from me? And I thought they were going to put religion on me and all that. And it wasn't about that, man. It was about being of service and helping one addict, helping another, and me relating to somebody, because, my vocabulary, I learned a lot here, man. My vocabulary back then, I thought I was pretty an intellectual giant. I never went to the ninth grade, but in my head, when I ran through the steps, because I wanted to figure it all out, I read each one. I said, oh yeah, this one. Oh, I know what that one's about. And oh, I know this one. I know that's a confession step. I'm a Catholic, an ex-Catholic or a Catholic person. I know what that's about and this and that. So I wanted to work them the way I wanted to work them. Self-will run riot, right? I was told by an old timer, matter of fact, happened to be a priest, an addict priest, that said to me, the miracle of this program is not so much the steps themselves, because these are concepts that have been around forever or a long time. He goes, but where the miracle is that they were numbered 1 through 12, and that there was a reason why they did that, And so it's that process. Then and now, as far as, what has not changed or what still haunts me, it's like, my thinking, right? Our thinking is what, still comes after me, man, that addictive thinking. And I'm not going to sit here and talk, share all about, how it manifests itself. But, when it jumps up on me, man, the only thing I can hang on to at times when I'm in that funk is that I know this too will pass. I know it's not forever, because I used to think that when these feelings and emotions came over me, I thought it was the boogeyman. I thought it was that monster that took out all my friends, that had people jumping off of bridges, man, that had people putting guns to their head, And what it was this. It was really trying to be my friend in some way. It was my feelings trying not attack me. It was trying to get noticed, man. It was trying to say, hey, man, I'm hurting. I'm feeling. And I didn't know what that language was, man. Because I had it broken down to just a couple things, and that was, fear and judgment, and anger, And so I've since been able to feel my feelings, which is a wonderful thing to do. I didn't ever want to, but, that's part of what we have to go through. Life shows up. So, and I'm not going to preach to you, right? I mean, you know, if you stay clean, no matter what, life's going to show up. And, there's a lot of things that you never promise you a rose garden, right? But And what else was told me is that, you know, I may not know where I'm headed, but I sure know where I'm coming from. And I did not like being where I was coming from, you know. Now, conversely, now I want to stay. I don't want change. Really, I want my wife to be here. You know, I don't want to, you know, have to have any more surgeries, you know. You know, it used to be when I was growing up and where I came from, you know, is, you know, we all come up in different ways, you know, and I grew up in the inner city, Boston, Massachusetts, and, you know, I'm not going to get into the whole story, but I had to, you know, my dad left, my mother was very ill in hospitals, and I grew up in foster homes and stuff, you know, and so, you know, having pain and physical scars was a good thing. You know, it was your badge of courage, you know. I remember I saw this woman when I was 10 years old, sniffing glue, gasoline, or I was 12 years old, and I walked into this house with my road dog, and his sister was kicking a habit on the couch, man. I'm 12 years old. And I said, what's up with Cheryl, man? She doesn't look good. She was, you know, really sick. He goes, oh, you know, she's paying her dues. And I said, paying her dues? What does that mean? He goes, well, you know, she's riding that horse. I said, what horse? You know, she's kicking that skag, you know, hair on. And I said, wow, you think, I mean, it looked ugly, but what do you think I said inside of myself? The feeling that washed over me was, wow, I think I want some of that. I think I want some of that misery. Now that's insane thinking, second step, right? And it's like, you know, and so what that was is that my life up until then was so painful, I would do anything to get out of it, man, to get away from it. And I see myself doing that still when I'm in pain. I catch myself. If I don't catch myself, my sponsees will pull me up, or my sponsor will share it with me, or one of you will say that and remind me, because aren't we here for that reason? Aren't we here to give each other the miracle and the gift of relating and reminding, even though we don't like to hear it when we're given it? What a beautiful, wonderful gift that is, you know. And so I don't know how much time I have. I want to just, you know, say, you know, that again, the biggest lessons that I've learned have not come in hospitals. I've been in many of them. Have not been in, you know, other institutions or whatever, you know, doesn't have to come through pain. You know, I don't have to carry that bag of rocks, man, you know, across that bridge. I can just walk across the bridge, you know, a lot of the times, you know. I remember, you know, I know it reminds me, you know, my wife walked in to our office about 7, 8, 10 years ago or something. And I had my feet up and I had a tape measure. And I had just my skivvies on, my boxer shorts. And I'm measuring all my scars on my body. And she walks in and she goes, Billy, what are you doing? And I felt like she caught me, like, you know, being weird or something. I said, what do you mean? And she goes, what are you doing with that tape measure? I said, well, I'm measuring my scars. She goes, why would you do that? I said, I don't know, I'm a guy. And, you know, so I say that because, you know, do I honor those scars? Sure. Do I honor the scars in my heart? Sure, I do. But, you know, I just have to remember, particularly now that I'm jammed up, as we all are with this COVID, and your mind starts tripping on you. You know, I just retired, you know, I mean, you know, I'm 69, I'm in my 69th year on this planet, you know, and I'm finally retiring and don't want to. You know, I've worked, you know, or done something since we were kids. You know, my brother who I raised, you know, because I was a second father, you know, decided to put a bullet in his head 2 years ago. I say that now because he did it because he lost his job. And I'm saying, you know, and I get it, you know, about the workaholism stuff, but he didn't have the program that we had, you know, and so I'm very grateful for that. And so anyway, I know I'm kind of rambling, but I want to tell you guys that, you know, the more I try to figure out what this program is, the more it eludes me, right? I mean, it's not hip to say it. I mean, I know it's hip to say that, but it's true. My higher power has changed many times, but one thing that has not changed over all these years that I've been clean, that I can take to the grave and will take to the grave with me, is this, and that is love is real. Love is real. And love is very powerful. If I step out of the way and let it and receive it, you know. And so I'll share this in ending. And I share this a lot when I share, but at the end of when I speak. But, you know, in the end of the story, it was interesting, Archie, when you were reading, I didn't remember a whole lot of that, you know, and it was the end of it was pretty poignant. And that is, I do believe that all our wisdom morphs, circles back to innocence. That's where I think my higher power lives, for sure. Spontaneity and innocence, right? And but from the mouths of babes, right? Young children. For those of you who have kids, I never had them. You know, we never had them, as you read in the story, if you heard that. But from the mouths of babes comes wisdom. From the mouths of innocence comes wisdom. And when the question was asked, true story, Rachel Elizabeth, age 9 years old, was asked, hey, Rachel, by her mother. Hey, Rachel, what have you learned so far? Her mother must have been a psychologist. David, you'll understand that one. So her mother says to her, so Rachel Elizabeth, what have you learned so far in life? And she thought for a moment and she says, well, she goes, what I know is that if I want something really, really bad, Mom, I need to keep my room clean all week. And so the metaphor there, or the message there is I keep my room clean. Not all the time, not 100%, but, you know, I keep my room clean through being of service, working the steps, showing up. If I'm on my deathbed and somebody said, Billy, give me the words, man, for, you know, what you think life has all been about. Give me whatever wise words. And I would say it comes in two words, and that is show up. And, show up. Don't run with a spike in your arm. Don't run. Just show up. Because if you have a higher power, you know, and you have the faith and you have people around you, you'll be able to show up for yourself. And then eventually, when those people aren't around and you lay your head in bed at night and you go to the belly of the beast where we go, you can go alone and know that you're going to be safe and you're going to be okay. Love you guys. Thank you for listening to me. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Awesome.